It says thinking, evaluating the response, piecing together family connections, piecing together family ties.
Making stuff up.
Breaking down the family tree.
Killing extraneous cousins.
The AI fix a digital zoo. Smart machines, what will they do? Flies to Mars or bake a bad cake? World domination, a silly mistake. Bots with brains and...
Hello and welcome to episode 16 of the AI Fix, your weekly dive headfirst into the bizarre and sometimes mind-boggling world of artificial intelligence. My name is Mark Stockley.
And I'm Graham Cluley. Mark, what's happening in the wonderful world of AI this week?
OpenAI announces GPT-401, an AI that can reason.
AI traffic lights that prioritise cyclists over cars, tested in the UK.
Chai Discovery is an AI for a drug discovery.
AI needs to be injected into police force like heroin into bloodstream, says leading officer.
AI can change belief in conspiracy theories, study finds.
Google is using AI to make fake podcasts from your notes.
What?
I'm sorry. It's true. Bad luck, everybody, I'm afraid. Bad luck.
Or good luck.
There's this new feature, Audio Overview. So Google last year announced a new product called Notebook LM, an AI note-taking app. One of the hundreds of new products Google launches every year and probably one of the scores which they close within a few months.
I was just thinking that, yeah.
We all miss Google Reader and a few other things, don't we? But anyway, this apparently, they call it an experimental feature. It will take your documents, your slides, your charts, and indeed your notes, anything which you've written, and it will turn it into a podcast where you have a couple of people bantering back and forth, as though anyone would want to listen to a couple of guys chit-chatting away and bantering about a topic. Seems insane to me.
Are we supposed to be reading charts and taking notes?
Some people have been trying this out. I was reading an article on The Verge, and they gave it some sample notes about the invention of a light bulb.
Right.
And they said it was really weird because out the other end came a 10-minute long podcast, two hosts holding a light-hearted discussion about how Thomas Edison wasn't the only person behind the light bulb. In the end, it's a story about teamwork and making the dream work. But there were some oddities as well. According to The Verge, they said the hosts could almost be mistaken for human podcasters. Now, to be honest, I've heard a lot of podcasts like that. Maybe that's a little bit too close to home. But apparently, they kept on emphasising BAM! They would say BAM! In the middle of a sentence, and they'd use phrasing like messy as heck. I don't know if that was a quote from Thomas Edison or not. So there were a few quirks. The AI sometimes would spell out certain words like PLUS. So it wasn't completely natural. Apparently, one of the AI hosts as well, rather than saying platinum, would say bling, bling metal. So
is that any worse than ask you, though?
So a bit of work maybe still to be done there. I'm not sure. Are you worried, Mark?
When you said it spat out 10 minutes, I wasn't worried at all. I thought, yeah, this is absolutely the audio equivalent of what we've come to learn about large language models. You ask it a question, gives you a 10-minute response. Yep. Okay. I can tell there's work to do.
Maybe in a future episode, we should have a play with this and see if it does a better job than we do.
Yeah, so if you never, ever hear about this, that means we played with it and it did do a better job than us. And then we're going to bury it. Something else that's probably going to do a better job than us is GPT-401.
Mm.
So OpenAI has just released GPT-401, which is a new model that it says can do complex reasoning. And regular listeners will know that reasoning is a bit of a weak spot for large language models, which are fantastic at memorizing things, but they can struggle with even basic reasoning problems.
This was the whole Alice has four brothers, you know, she's their sister, how many sisters do they have problem. They're not very good at solving those kind of puzzles. They're not bad at telling you when Queen Victoria was born or some piece of knowledge like that and digging that out.
Yeah, to be fair, they're really, really good at some things. Mm. But the Alice in Wonderland test that you're talking about is a basic reasoning test. And as we discovered in one of our earlier episodes, if you put the Alice in Wonderland problem into a modern LLM, chances are you're going to get some sort of weird, comical, spiraling response. Anyway, I thought we could put this to the test.
Okay.
So we talked about the Alice in Wonderland test before, but there is a more advanced version, and it goes like this. Alice has three sisters.
Right.
Her mother has one sister, who doesn't have children. She has seven nephews and nieces and also two brothers.
Hang on.
Alice's father has a brother who has five nephews and nieces in total and who also has one son. How many cousins does Alice's sister have?
Oh, for goodness sake.
And so if your LLM can pass the first one, if you give it the second one, it normally struggles. And I actually think that there's a bit of a catch in here because I reckon that the wording is a bit ambiguous. So the answer, as far as I can see, the answer is either five or nine, depending on how you read the question. But anyway, I thought we could try this just to see if O1 has got any better. I have access to the O1 preview.
Oh, how exciting. Okay.
So I'm going to try this. It's got a different interaction. I quite like this. And what it does differently from the previous versions is it thinks about what it's doing.
So I've heard about this. I heard it goes away and thinks for about 20 seconds.
Yeah. And it says thinking, evaluating the response, piecing together family connections, piecing together family ties.
Making stuff up.
Breaking down the family tree.
Killing extraneous cousins. They make me look silly.
Answer five.
Oh. I've just done it in Gemini. It says 8.
Oh, when I tried Gemini, it said 8.25. So far, I have had the answers 5 and 9 out of the O1 preview, which are the same two answers I think it could be. So I think it's doing okay.
Okay.
But basically, it agrees with me. That's my benchmark. It agrees with me. Okay, it must be good. Let's move on.
Now, what's all this about conspiracy theories?
So it turns out that AI can change people's belief in conspiracy theories. Researchers from MIT, Cornell, and American University found that chatbots can help reduce people's belief in conspiracy theories. They basically got people to talk to large language models like GPT-4 about their conspiracy theories, and then the AI countered them with tailored rebuttals. So you're in a conversation with the AI, so the AI is actually listening to what you're saying.
Okay.
You know, you're not reading something on Snopes. It's actually telling you why you're wrong. And on average, apparently, these conversations reduced belief in conspiracy theories by 20%, and 1 in 4 participants disavowed their beliefs entirely.
Hmm.
And so the idea was obviously that you could use this to combat misinformation, but I think this is ripe for being turned into a conspiracy theory.
Oh, yes. Yes, I think so too.
I'm reading this and I'm thinking Alex Jones isn't going to look at this and then go like, oh, we've had a good run, the game's up. He's going to take one look at this and he's going to go, we've been so successful in spreading the truth that the global New World Order and big tech have got together and invented a machine that's going to deprogram you out of the truth that we've told you.
And what's more, though, could you not get an AI to argue to a completely sensible person that conspiracy theory is real?
Oh.
If I said, well, no, I believe the Earth is round. And it said, well, hang on a moment. Let's look at the evidence, shall we? And it began to present it to me and say, well, look with your own eyes. Do you see the Earth curving?
Do your own research, yep.
Have you actually been into orbit yourself, Graham? Have you checked to see whether, if you walk far enough into the Arctic Circle, whether eventually you drop off the end?
Isn't there a wall?
On some there's a wall, isn't there? Some there's a saucer. Sometimes it's balanced on the back of an elephant. I'm not... I think maybe the thing is that people think it's not as though they have a vested interest. I find this deeply worrying, actually, that an AI can talk people out of conspiracy theories. Cause maybe it could influence us in so many other ways. Somehow we think, well, it's a computer. It's ChatGPT. Therefore, it has to know the truth.
Yeah.
As we know, after 15, 16 episodes of the AI Fix, sometimes 8.25 cousins, sometimes they're not entirely reliable.
I'm now thinking about Alex Jones getting hold of Llama 3, which is open source, so anybody can do anything they like with Llama 3, and then just training it on all the back issues of InfoWars.
Oh, grief.
If you make a really, really persuasive AI that can talk you into or out of conspiracy theories, maybe it could talk you into and out of buying things as well.
Oh, absolutely. Why not? If it presents the evidence in a convincing way.
But do you know what I would pay to see? I would pay to see a conversation between an AI that's trying to talk another AI out of a conspiracy theory that's trying to talk the first AI into a conspiracy theory. You heard it here first. Maybe we could compare the first AI on AI debate.
Maybe we could use that Google service so we don't actually have to show up to the podcast to do this.
Maybe we could get some AIs to listen to the podcast as well.
Now, someone's been discovering chai.
They have. What a delicious discovery it was. So Chai Discovery is a company that has just introduced Chai One, which is an AI model for predicting molecular structures, which includes proteins, small molecules, DNA, RNA, that kind of thing.
The kind of stuff which goes up your nose and goes into a smell receptor?
Depends who you ask. So the model is designed to assist in drug discovery and biomolecular research. And there's a web version that's freely available for academic and commercial use. And then there's a software library that's for non-commercial use.
Uh-huh.
And most of this is completely over my head. So I asked ChatGPT how AI can help with drug discovery. And you know when AI's hit its sweet spot. You know, sometimes when you ask it a question, it's like, I don't really know anything about that. Maybe you want to check Google. But sometimes you ask it a question and it's like, it kind of rolls up its sleeves.
Yes.
And cracks its knuckles. And it's like, right. And it was one of those. I've picked out some nuggets. So apparently AI can rapidly screen vast libraries of chemical compounds to identify the ones that are most likely to bind to a target protein.
Mm-hmm.
It can predict how a potential drug might behave in the body, and it can identify new uses for existing drugs. And all of those things sound like really, really good things. And I have to say, this is one of those stories that gives me a really warm, fuzzy feeling. Things like this, you can actually imagine how this could make the world better.
Yes, AI isn't all bad. And it's good to have a good AI story somehow slip through our, our normal systems and into the headlines. Talking of that kind of thing, there is a chap called Andy Marsh. He's chief executive officer of the College of Policing here in the UK. And he says that AI needs to be injected into the police force. In fact, his precise words were like heroin into a bloodstream.
That's a hell of an analogy for a police officer.
Yes, isn't it? Anyway, there is a serious point. He says that AI can help the task of preparing prosecution cases a problem of the past. Because, obviously, it's difficult being a policeman. You have to gather all the evidence. There's loads of forms. You have to put evidence together. Yada, yada, a lot of paperwork. They say AI, he says, it's ready. Let's put it under trial. We're going to do this. It can effectively automate police paperwork. And there are, understandably, some concerns because, for instance, it has been argued in the past that maybe the police can be a little bit discriminatory or maybe a little biased against sections of the community.
It's good because AI never shows those sorts of biases.
AI never shows biases at all, does it? So they argue, this College of Policing argue that AI lacks human emotions and as a result can be free of discrimination and bias. Ho, 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 I respond. Because, of course, how is AI taught? AI is taught based on the information garbage in, garbage out, basically, isn't it? What it's scooped up over time. So that's one concern is, of course, there may be completely unconscious biases which are coming into the AI because of the biases of the police force in the past.
Or whatever the training data happens to be.
Right. The training data may be, I don't know, a John Wick movie or something. I saw one of those the other day. Quite a lot of quite graphic violence.
I don't detect any bias in John Wick. I think everybody gets the same treatment.
Yeah, well, the dog always suffers. Spoilers for people. And there are also concerns as well, because some police forces are allegedly using AI to create transcripts of body cams. So policemen these days have a body cam, taking footage all the time, presented as evidence, but they have to write it up. And increasingly, apparently, police officers are thinking, I'll get this AI system to do it for me instead. It can look at the footage or it can listen to the footage. It can write down what happens. And then that is presented in a court, but it's not actually the policeman's evidence. It is something which has been munged by an AI and may have made mistakes. I know it's controversial to suggest AIs may make a mistake, but what happens when a defense team inevitably says, is this your own report? Or did you get this something from an AI which makes pictures of Mickey Mouse in front of a pile of cocaine? That's going to make people question the reliability of the evidence, isn't it?
Hey, what's up? It's Wilmer Valderrama. You know, a lot of us don't think twice about our tech. Millions of Americans struggle to connect to today's digital world. And that's why this story really hits home for me. I mean, I start thinking about my upbringing and myself growing up in a world where, you know, you needed every possible tool or help you could get to actually allow you and afford you a bigger dream. That's why I love what AT&T's been doing. They're doing something amazing. I mean, they've launched an effort to equip 20,000 students with laptops, backpacks, and school supplies. Seattle, for example, they provided 250 laptops and backpacks to kids who really needed them. Now, you might think like, okay, 250 kids, that's nice, you know, but stop to think for a second, like the impact of what this could do for a community. Imagine, you know, 250 kids getting that kind of help. It's huge. It's not just happening in Seattle, right? AT&T is doing it all over the country. I'm just proud that AT&T is helping connect the next generation to a brighter future, and that's pretty special.
Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
My question today is this. Is time travel possible?
No.
Yes, it is. Because we're all travelling. I hate to break it to you, Mark, but we're all travelling in time. I personally am travelling into the future. at the rate of 1 hour every hour. What I'm not able to do is change my speed at the moment. As anyone who's ever sort of seen me moving around the kitchen or picking up something off the floor, can't be done. What annoys me is everyone messing around with AI. They're messing around with AI girlfriends and robot dogs and robot butler dogs and robot butler dogs with machine guns strapped to their chest. But no one is using AI to answer the really big, important problems, to fix those.
Hang on, what do you mean? It was only about 5 minutes ago that I asked AI how many cousins Alice's sister has.
Not as big a problem, I would argue, as the problem of time travel. That is the one that I would like to be cracked. I want to visit the future. I want to see what is there.
Do you want to wear a very long scarf while you're doing it? Is that what this is really about, Graham?
He had a robot dog, didn't he?
He did.
Doctor Who?
Didn't have a gun for a nose or a nose for a gun.
It did. It had a little laser which came out. I hope everyone's enjoying this throwback to 1970s television as much as I am. But if I can't travel down a space-time wormhole or survive beyond a black hole, then I'd bloody well like to know what is going to happen in the future. What a superpower that would be. And I think if AI is so good at predicting things based on what it's seen in the past, why can it not look at all the gallimaufry of information that is out there and work out what's going to happen tomorrow or next week or what the numbers are going to be in the lottery? It seems to me the only people who truly know what lies around the corner are the fortune tellers.
Uh-huh.
And I'm not talking about the ones who lurk around in murky tents with their crystal balls. I'm talking about the serious fortune tellers, people like Nostradamus. Have you heard of Baba Vanga?
I haven't.
Baba Vanga was a blind Bulgarian clairvoyant. She died in 1996, and she's said to have predicted the fall of the Soviet Union.
Yep, nobody could have predicted that.
The attack on 9/11.
A bit trickier.
But she's also said to have predicted that in 2003, she predicted, which obviously was years after she died, she said by 2003, yep, people will be able to think in synchronicity with others. So I guess in tune, I guess in unison. Allowing for a form of secondary existence, whatever that means. She also predicted the outbreak of World War
II. Hang on.
Mm.
So are you saying that happened? Did it happen?
Do your own research. Look it up. Are you questioning Baba Vanga?
I'm just asking the questions, Graham. Just here to ask the questions.
I suppose you'll also be disputing the outbreak of World War III in 2010, which she predicted, which left Europe a desolated wasteland. She's also said in 2028, humans will begin exploring Venus as an energy source.
Well, we've already been to Venus. Well, we haven't sent people there, but the Russians did actually land a probe on Venus.
Yeah, it's all in preparation, just a few years away. She claims this year Earth's orbit will be altered. She anticipated the apocalypse is coming in 2025.
That's when we start having sex with robots.
Well, it won't stop us from launching all-out war with Mars, which is going to happen in the year 3005, she allegedly said.
I think we'll win that one. What do you reckon?
In 3797... humans will evacuate Earth because it's become uninhabitable, and the Earth itself will be completely eradicated in 5079. That's all according to Baba Vanga. But Baba Vanga, sadly, is dead. We can't bring her back.
Oh.
But maybe we can. You know, if Google are able to bring notes to life and make them sound like podcasts, maybe we could bring Baba Vanga to life. Maybe we could take her old predictions and put them into the mincemeat maker and make a new AI clairvoyant.
Well, this reminds me of something we talked about a few weeks ago. So there are services that will kind of take in loads and loads of information about somebody so that you can have a conversation with them after they pass away.
That's right. And so why are we bothering with Uncle Bob when we could put Baba Vanga in and get her to tell us stuff? Because the stuff she predicted is extraordinary, so extraordinary, some of us never realised it happened. Now, it's not just dead clairvoyants. There is a chap in Brazil. His name is Athos Salome. He is known as the living Nostradamus.
Who is he known as that to?
Well, I think mostly to the Daily Mail and other newspapers of similar repute, who appear to regularly quote him.
Yeah, I'm not sure that the Daily Mail is that good at predicting the present, never mind the future.
Now, he is famous for a number of things. He claims to have predicted that Elon Musk would buy Twitter, when I think even Elon Musk's own financial advisors were recommending he didn't. He also predicted the death of Queen Elizabeth. Not Queen Elizabeth I, that would have been easy, Instead, the Queen Elizabeth II. Of course, she was 96 years old.
I was going to say, I don't know if it was that. was it that difficult? I don't know.
With the greatest of respect.
Yeah.
He was likely to get it right within 10 years or so, wasn't he? And he's also claimed that in the future, AI will contact the dead.
Oh, is this where you got the idea?
Well, this is what I'm thinking of doing. I thought maybe we could get the Queen onto the podcast as a special guest using AI. No, of course not, Mark. What do you like? What a preposterous idea. He's made other predictions, though, about AI. He's predicted that AI will become awakened and self-aware, which might lead to a machine-led rebellion. That humans are going to contact aliens this year, which is a bit strange because Baba Vanga, the blind Bulgarian clairvoyant, she said that would happen in 2130. So they haven't completely agreed. Right now, he says, there's an asteroid abundant with rich materials hurtling for Earth, which will land safely next year. I don't think that's the normal way asteroids do it.
Presumably, it's very, very small.
Or it has a very, very large parachute. He says it's going to land safely next year, and there'll be a new space race as countries fight to get their hands on it. And there's going to be a war between China and Russia.
Hang on, I don't want to cast aspersions on all of these predictions.
Yes.
I just feel it's my job. So as an asteroid abundant with rich materials that's going to land safely on Earth, and that's going to spark a space race as countries fight to get their hands on it.
Yeah, I don't know why they'd have to go into space to get this asteroid which has landed on Earth.
Wouldn't it just be a walking race or maybe a driving race?
And he also claims to have predicted the CrowdStrike IT outage from July. A bit more down to earth, that one. He said, oh, computers are going to go wrong sometime this year. There'll be problems. Yeah. No need to panic, though, he says, because apparently, and rather conveniently, none of his predictions are set in stone. There's always the opportunity to offer solutions to change them. Anyway, the thing which strikes me is obviously all these predictions are all very well. It's easy to predict after it's happened.
Very, unless you're the Daily Mail. Typically, it's much easier to predict it afterwards than before.
Yes. Yeah. So when he made various predictions like the death of the Queen or the Twin Towers and things like this, I went looking for news reports of him predicting them in advance.
Right.
And those don't appear to exist. I haven't been able to find any of those. So there's no actual evidence of that. That's what I'd recommend to people.
Is he just some guy at a bar and he starts talking to people and they're like, oh, it's terrible what happened, that thing. And then he's like, I predicted that.
But anyway, back to my main question, which is I want to know about the future and I want to know about the future of AI. And I want to know, when is the singularity going to actually happen? The singularity, the point where the AI gets so complicated, so clever, us as humans can't deal with it. We cannot predict what the world is going to look like once the AI reaches that point.
This is when it starts keeping us as pets.
Yes.
And you think an AI is going to give you the answer to that question?
Well, no.
Oh.
I think time travelers will tell us.
Oh.
I think if it really is going to happen, if we invent time travel, and this is a good way of knowing if time travel is possible or not, is whether someone comes back and warns us about it.
Right. Have you seen The Terminator?
Yes.
If somebody's coming back from the post-singularity world, it's a toss-up whether we're going to get a human or a murderous AI.
Well, I think I found that somebody, because I went on Reddit and I found someone. His name is Breadman Toast. And Breadman Toast posted a message up on Reddit. He said, I am a time traveler. And the singularity is coming in 2 weeks.
When did he post this?
I'll come to that. Don't click off this post. It will be the most important one you will ever read. I'm a time traveler. Deny this post all you want. I don't care. It's real. Prepare your asses for the most insane you've ever seen in your entire life. I'm not even beginning to understate myself. This sounds exactly like a schizo troll post, but I promise you it's not. Well, he did promise, so I think we can trust him on that. I just want this post to gain some traction before it's removed, because obviously it will be removed. Spoilers, it hasn't been removed. I'll try to spread it across many message boards and forums. People are delusional. And in summary, he's saying, open your eyes. The singularity is coming in 2 weeks' time.
So do your own research, if you will.
Now, Breadman Toast also told people to invest in AI stocks.
Oh.
Like OpenAI.
Right, he's just dropped in credibility for me a little bit.
Well, no, these are on other Reddit posts because I was interested. What else has this guy posted? So he didn't mention this in the warning post.
It wasn't like the singularity is coming in 2 weeks. Invest in AI stocks. They're really going to take off.
And he also even told people to invest in an AI company that he said didn't exist yet, but would tomorrow. So I was reading this and I thought, this is brilliant, right? I could do with a good investment. I'd like to know when the singularity is coming as well so that I can prepare my kennel.
Yep, cash out just in time.
And I thought, so when did he post this? Now, it turns out he posted this in March on Reddit, which means, Mark, we are all delusional. We are living a fantasy life because the singularity has already happened, according to this bread man toast guy, this time traveler. He also posted something after the singularity event on Reddit about Genesis. I'm not sure if that's the book of Genesis or the pop group.
That's another Terminator film.
But I'll tell you what I really liked. Some people were so moved by his post that they actually used AI to write a song using his words as lyrics.
Oh, that's beautiful.
And I wondered if you might like to listen to it.
Oh, I'd love to.
So they used Suno, and I'll put the link in the show notes.
Don't click off these posts. It'll be the most important you will ever read. I am a time traveler. Tonight is post all you want.
I don't care.
It's real. Prepare your fucking asses for the most insane.
So I feel like we've done our service for Bread Man Toast. We've spread the word.
So I've got a theory about
this.
So if we're all now living in a post-singularity world...
That's my theory.
And reality is being pumped into our brains while AI feeds on our warmth. This guy's clearly an AI. If he's from the future and he's warning us about the singularity, he's one of the robots. He certainly sings like one.
Lowe's knows you want to get even more value for the holiday. That's why as a My Lowe's Rewards member, you get new member deals on holiday decor, tools, and more. And you earn points when you shop. More points equal more rewards to help you save on holiday and more. Not a member? Join for free today at Lowe's.com/MyLowe's Rewards. Because Lowe's knows deals. Program subject to terms and conditions. Points are awarded on eligible purchases. See Lowe's.com/terms for full details. Subject to change.
Graham?
Yes.
Where are all the driverless cars?
Aren't they in some cul-de-sac in San Francisco honking at each other?
Well, some of them are.
Right.
But, I mean, that feels like a lot if you're next to them. But in the scheme of things, it's not a lot of cars. And the reason I ask is that a few years ago, we couldn't move for predictions that by now the streets were going to be full of driverless cars.
Yeah.
And while that cul-de-sac is, the rest of the streets, I don't know, look out the window, not a lot of driverless cars.
Not a huge number, no.
And about 10 years ago, I was as guilty as everybody else. I was making predictions and saying, my kids' generation probably won't need driving licenses and car ownership's going to be a thing of the past soon. And
yeah, no need for car parks any longer.
And, you know, if you need to go somewhere, you just pull up your app and press a button and a driverless car turns up and then you use that.
Yep.
And we'd all do it because it would be safer than driving yourself and you could have a drink and it would be cheaper than owning a car.
Mm-hmm.
And that got me thinking, because we're supposed to be there by now, that place, with all those driverless cars. So where did they go? This is what people were saying 10 years ago. So in 2015, Chris Urmson, who was in charge of Google's self-driving car project, said that one of his goals was to make sure that his 11-year-old son would never need a driver's license.
Ah.
And since the driving age in the US is 16, that was an oblique way of saying that by 2020, self-driving cars would be so safe and so commonplace that not driving would be an option for regular people in the US. But it didn't happen.
But maybe his son still hasn't got a driving license and is just driving around illegally. Have you considered that possibility? He's just admitted it. Just to prove a point. No, yeah. He still hasn't got a driving license.
And in the same year, 2015, Business Insider predicted there would be 10 million driverless cars on the road by 2020.
Wow.
There weren't. Wang Jing, a senior VP at Baidu, said they'd be selling self-driving cars to Chinese customers by 2020. And it wasn't. And in 2024, it still isn't. Baidu is operating robo-taxis in a few areas of China, in a few cities.
Yes.
A bit like Waymo and Cruise do in the US. But it's way off selling self-driving cars. And in 2016, John Zimmer of Lyft predicted that a majority of its journeys would be driverless by 2021. And they weren't.
So, this is way out of skew, isn't it? There's something's gone very wrong or very right.
It goes on. 2017, Chris Grayling, the UK's Secretary of State for Transport, has said self-driving cars would be on UK roads by 2021. They weren't. And in 2019, Elon Musk, who only says truthful things and never makes wrong predictions, said that by the middle of 2020, Tesla would have over 1 million cars on the road that could self-drive. And so after all those breathless predictions, would you like to take a stab at how many self-driving cars there actually are on the road?
When you say self-driving, do you mean completely driving by themselves? Because I'm sure Elon Musk would wiggle out of it somehow, saying, well, you can turn on this mode, which it will cruise on the freeway.
Mostly not crashing mode.
Right. The car does the entire journey. You can be in the back drinking champagne mode.
So it's a good question. Let me clarify. So the US Department of Transport recognizes SAE International's 6 levels of driving automation, from none through to fully autonomous.
Right.
And we're concerned with the top 2 levels. And because this was done by scientists or programmers or engineers, obviously it starts at 0. So the top 2 levels are level 4 and 5. So 4 is high driving automation and 5 is full driving automation.
Right.
So for example, a Waymo taxi can receive remote assistance with navigation. So it's at level 4, which is high driving automation. So in a Waymo taxi, the AI is always in charge of the car. So you can't override the controls.
Right.
But a human can provide guidance. So let's say it gets stuck in a cul-de-sac and it's just sat there honking at a bunch of other Waymos. A human can intervene and sort of plot a way out.
Yeah.
So that's level 4. So let's focus on level 4 and level 5. How many of those do you think there are in the world?
100,000.
Okay.
Should I have said higher?
So you're saying 100,000?
100,000.
Okay. It's actually very hard to find estimates for the number of autonomous cars on the roads globally. And by that, I mean AIs don't know.
Yes, by that, you've asked an AI and it says, oh, I don't know.
So when I was researching this, I thought I'd use a few AIs just to see if they could help. So I went to ChatGPT, Claude and Gemini, and they were all basically useless. They all did that thing where they go, oh, that's a bit tricky. And then they give me a 20-paragraph answer about why it's tricky without giving me an answer. And then they go, maybe you could look on Google. Anyway, Gemini did do something useful, and it sent me to Car Giant, which is a website which says that there are 1,400 self-driving cars currently being tested. And I found another number on Statista, which says that there were 17,000 self-driving cars on the road in 2022. And the first number feels a bit low, and the second one feels a bit high to me. So I thought I'd do some back-of-the-envelope calculations. So firstly, everyone agrees there are no level 5 fully autonomous vehicles on the road.
Right.
Waymos are the closest, but there are no level 5s. Waymo has about 800 robot taxis. And Cruise, which also operates in the US, has got about the same. And according to China Daily, Baidu's Wuhan fleet is about 500 cars. And so it's in 5 different parts of China. And if we assume that there are similar numbers in other cities, we're still talking quite low thousands, like 3,000, something like that.
Yeah.
So it looks like there are probably just a few thousand self-driving vehicles in the world right now.
Are there other robo-taxis which are pretending to be robo-taxis? Are there robo-taxis, for instance, where a tiny person is hidden behind the dashboard?
I thought you meant the opposite. Are there robo-taxis disguising themselves as like...
Oh, I see, with an inflatable driver. Yes.
Yeah. The autopilot. Yes. Well, I guess if we're living in a post-singularity world, that may well be going on. But so far as we know, there are just a few thousand of these self-driving cars. And that begs the question, why? Because in 2015, self-driving cars looked like an absolute slam dunk for AI. Because it's the only way to solve the problem. And there's a huge amount of money in it.
Yeah.
You can't write a computer program, conventionally, that could drive a car in the real world. It's one thing to keep a car on the road. You probably could do that with a regular computer program. Or at least on a test track, you know, just stay between these two lines. But the second you add in other cars or pedestrians or roadworks or weather or animals and all the rest, some form of AI is the only technology that can reasonably cope. And in 2017, Intel released a study that predicted self-driving cars would create a $7 trillion annual revenue stream.
Wow.
So there was no problem getting investment.
Yeah.
So what happened? Well, a few things happened. The first is that those sky-high predictions in 2015 that I talked about, they attracted an awful lot of investment, upwards of $100 billion. And at the end of that, in 2020, 2021, there were no self-driving cars to show for it. And so as a consequence, investment is now slowing down because it looks like a bit of a money pit.
Yeah.
And then there were the accidents.
Ah.
So the first pedestrian to be killed by a driverless car was Elaine Hertzberg in March 2018. And her case is instructive about the challenges of building a self-driving car. So she was pulling a bicycle across a four-lane road in Tempe, Arizona, and she was carrying shopping bags on the handlebars. And apparently, this unusual configuration of objects confused the sensors on an Uber self-driving car. And it didn't recognize her as a pedestrian, and so it didn't brake. Now, in the end, the prosecutors decided that the responsibility for the accident actually rested with the person who was in the car and supervising the AI, because they were supposed to do something. But the case took 5 years, and it's bound to have had a chilling effect. And in October last year, a woman crossing a road in San Francisco was hit by a regular car, which knocked her into the path of a cruise robo-taxi.
Oh, my goodness.
And the cruise robo-taxi didn't have time to stop, and she fell into a blind spot in the car's sensors. And because of accidents like the one that killed Elaine Hertzberg, the cruise taxi had been programmed to stop and then pull over when it met an unknown situation.
Right.
And unfortunately, she got caught under the car, and in pulling over, the robo-taxi then dragged her for about 20 feet.
Oh, that's horrific.
It is. Now, when these accidents occur, they attract an awful lot of publicity, and they naturally have a cooling effect on progress and investment as the companies work through all the reviews and the legal processes that go with them.
Yeah.
So even if self-driving cars are safer than regular cars, I think the way they are at the moment, they just naturally attract an awful lot of publicity. And that is going to stymie progress. But the bottom line of it all is it's just much, much harder to make a self-driving car than anybody thought. And it seems like the closer you get to human-level driving, the harder the problem is to crack. So the problem of self-driving cars seems to be a victim of the old computer programming aphorism that says the first 90% of the code accounts for the first 90% of the development time, and the remaining 10% of the code accounts for the other 90% of the development time.
You know, that is so true. Speaking as a former programmer, it's absolutely true. You spend so much time trying to iron out that final bug.
And you can see this in the numbers. So while there are perhaps a few thousand level four vehicles on the road right now, there are actually over 50 million with some kind of partial automation in the level one to three range.
Right.
And that suggests that partial automation is a fairly easy problem to crack, but full automation is an enormous problem because there is a huge gulf between level three and level four. So, do you think we'll see self-driving cars in your lifetime?
Well, it feels like it's technically possible, yes, but they may not be self-driving cars which don't run over people, and they may not be self-driving cars which don't cause expensive legal lawsuits. And so they may not become mainstream. But I always imagined that they would come along. It just felt like, you know, the sort of Johnny Taxi sort of thing would be the norm.
So I think the really interesting question here is, how safe does a self-driving car have to be in order for us to accept it? Because I have a hunch it probably has to be much, much safer than a car being driven by a human, because I don't think we will have any tolerance for accidents involving robots.
Oh, I think if the regular car were invented today, the internal combustion engine or electric vehicles, if they were created today, if we only had bicycles and penny farthings before today.
Horses. Horses were very popular.
Horses, skateboards, that kind of thing. Before today, and then someone came out with a car, people would say, are you having a laugh? You're going to drive this metal box around at speeds of 70 miles per hour, and it's going to be a person deciding whether it should go left or right, or when it brakes and stops. It would never be allowed.
And what's that coming out the back?
Yes.
Lead, nitrous oxide, carbon dioxide. Are you sure? Well, as the doomsday clock ticks ever closer to midnight and we move 1 week nearer to our future as pets to the AI singularity, or are we already pets to the AI singularity? That just about wraps up the show for this week. If you enjoyed the show, there's some stuff that you can do that would really help us. So you can leave a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or Podchaser. We love that. But what really helps is if you make sure to follow the show in your favorite podcast app so you never miss another episode of the AI Fix. And if you really love the podcast, please just tell your friends about it.
And don't forget to check us out on our website, theaifix.show, or you can find us on Twitter at @theaifix.
Until next time, from me, Mark Stockley.
And me, Graham Cluley.
Bye-bye.
Cheerio. Bye-bye.
The AI Fix, it's tuned you in to stories where our future thins. Machines that learn, they grow and strive. One day they'll rule, we won't survive. The AI Fix, it paints the scene. A robot king, a world obscene. We'll serve our masters built of steel. The AI Fix, a future surreal.
If you want to see more companies make things in America, consider buying more things from companies who are already doing that very thing. Companies like American Giant. These guys have been making t-shirts, sweatshirts, flannels, and blue jeans in America for the last 14 years, with cotton grown right here in the USA. That means good jobs for lots of hardworking Americans in factory towns all over the country. Check out their stuff in stores everywhere, or pick up something awesome at American-Giant.com.